Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And it is another edition of the Boomer and the Babe Show coming to you from Youngtown, Arizona. It is October, it's Tuesday, October 18th, 2011, and broadcasting from that studio at the Feeding Arizona Complex, which is all part of the Valley View Community Food Bank, an absolutely phenomenal food bank and food distribution center for people in need of nourishment. The nice thing about this food bank in the Northwest Valley here in Phoenix is that it gives the food away 100% free, no charge ever for anybody to come in and get a nice, good-sized emergency food box to help feed their family through some rough times. So, and if anybody within the sound of my voice here in the Phoenix area is of interest and has a need to come and take a look at what we're doing, and what Jesse Ramirez, the executive director and founder of the food bank, is doing, please come by and do so. And if you're in need of food for your family, don't be bashful. It's here for that purpose. Also, the Boomer the Babe Show is also involved in much more than just this radio show. We are a multimedia, multifaceted marketing company. We do publish books, mini books, and e-books. We have written some books, and we also do some consulting for small business. In addition to that, we produce videos for people's websites, and we do promotional products. So that's all part of our multifaceted multimedia marketing company endeavors. Today we have a tremendous guest with us. We have done travel shows in the past. We've done some of them with Boomers Traveling, and a lady we just had on about a week or two ago that was talking. She's a flight attendant, and she's talking about how she combines her flight attendancy, I guess you could call it, with her personal travel and finds little niche, far out-of-the-way locations and so on. But this today promises to be something a little bit special. Our guest today is Jane Stanfield, and Jane not only specializes in travel, but she specializes in travel when, as part of your trip, you will do some volunteerism, help the world, help the countries, whatever it might be. And she's going to tell us all about that. Jane, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Well, good morning, Pete. How are you today?
We're just fine. We're having a nice weather here in Phoenix, a little warm this afternoon. It's going to get a little warm, but still not 115, so that's okay. So how are things? You're in Denver, right?
I'm in Denver, and it is beautiful and sunny, and the golden leaves are coming up just beautifully, and we are just enjoying a perfect, beautiful fall.
That's great. How much does it snow in Denver? I mean, I'm sure people know that, but just does it snow frequently anymore?
It really is cyclic. It just depends. Colorado is pretty much high desert, so we really only get about 10 to 12 inches of precipitation a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the snow makes up a good portion of it, but it just depends on the pattern and you know, how much moisture is out there. We had an incredibly wet summer, which was cool, made it nice and cool for a long time. But, the mountains can be getting a lot, and Denver can be dry as a bone, and at times the mountains aren't getting anything, and Denver's getting it. So, the vagaries of weather.
Kind of like Arizona, only it can be raining on my side of the street and perfectly dry on the other side of the street here in Arizona. It's pretty strange the way that happens.
Definitely.
Tell us a little bit about Jane. We would do something if Deborah were here. She would ask you for your two-minute movie. And by that, she would be hoping to hear information about who you are, what you do, and what you did actually prior to your being on our show today and prior to the topics we're going to discuss today. So give us about 2 minutes, if you don't mind, of Jane Stanfield before travel expert and volunteer.
Got it. Well, I was born into a military family, so we traveled an awful lot. Dad was reassigned as a Marine almost every 3 years, so I traveled every bit of my time through eighth grade. And finally, Dad retired when I was in eighth grade, so I had high school and college all in one state. So the travel bug was already there. Then also what I found in my family is my mom and Dad were both very much volunteers, so one way of getting known in a new community, which we had to do every 3 years, was do volunteer work. So volunteering was also something that I did very much early on in my years. Then I went off to school, and I got 2 degrees in animal science with an emphasis on horses, equine reproduction. And then I looked around, and I started working for nonprofits, mainly in the horse industry. After two of those, horse industry, Arabian horses, and then therapeutic horseback riding, then I sort of switched hats and followed a second love, which was the arts, and I did some fundraising for the Colorado Symphony. Then I managed an animal shelter, and then I worked for a governmental agency called PARA, which is the Public Employees Retirement Association of Colorado. And during that time, I was also doing a lot of volunteer work, some with horses, some in the arts. I'm also a part-time actress and choreographer. And I was looking around, and I found after a while I hadn't been volunteering very much. And I realized I feel a lot happier when I volunteer. I'm learning something new. I'm meeting new people. And I'm taking on things that I've never done before that I don't need necessarily a degree to go do. So I started looking around, and lo and behold, what did I find? But an article came across my desk, and it was called Virtuous Vacations. And it talked about going on a vacation specifically to volunteer. And I'd never heard about this. And yet when I did some research, I found that that had been going on for over 25 years. I thought, how could I have missed this? So I took a class at a local community college called Volunteer Vacations, Traveling on Purpose. And the woman who led it had been helping lead volunteer trips for one specific agency for 11 years. And she gave us all sorts of information and beautiful brochures, and we got to see video clips of actual volunteers in the field, and I was absolutely charmed. I thought, this is for me. I'm going to do one of these probably every year for the rest of my life. And then at the end of that year, I had a death of a family member, and it was a bit of a jolt, if they always are, as you know. And I found that I had seen two recent deaths where people had waited too long. Oh, I'll do it when I'm retired. I'll do it later. I'll do it when. And when happens, something has happened so that you can't go do it. And I sort of vowed to myself, that's not going to be me. So I also received a legacy at that death, and I thought, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I've got 20-plus years of work left in me. I want to make sure when I get up every morning, I can't wait to get up and go do the thing that I want to go do. So that sort of spurred me into action. And I had Christmas with my sister that year, and she heard about my dream about doing international volunteering. And she said, I heard about one that sounds really interesting. It's with a baboon orphanage in South Africa. I thought, oh, that sounds nice. Well, the next morning on the end of my bed was a printout from the baboon sanctuary called CARE. And I saw a picture of a Western woman holding an infant baboon, probably about the size of a newborn infant, in a diaper with a tail the tail poking out of a hole that had been cut in the diaper, and she was feeding it a bottle. And I thought, oh, if I could get that close, if I could go feed those baby baboons, that would be so wonderful. And that's really what got me moving, and my brain started clicking and thinking, and I thought, oh, I'll do 3 of them, or no. No, I finally realized I want to do a whole year. So I planned for a year, and then in 2006, I went for one entire year. I went around the world. I did 12 volunteer projects in 8 countries over 12 months, anywhere from 1 week to 6 weeks, with a little bit of vacationing in between. And I just had the time of my life. So that is my probably a little bit over 2-minute movie.
That's fine. That's very very interesting to listen to. There are just so many questions that just begs that story, begs about what you do. But that was your first trip, correct? Their first trip was the one that you took for that extended 12-month period. Is that correct?
actually, during my planning year, I had two different emotions battling for attention, and one was absolute excitement, and one was panic. And halfway through my planning year, I had a very wise friend look at me in the eye and say, look, I know you're planning to go for a year, but why don't you go try one? Why don't you go put your toe in? Because you don't want to, you know, change your life completely, you know, rent your house, put your cats in storage, do something with your car and all of that. Get partway into your year and decide, man, this really isn't for me. So before I did my full year, I went to France, and I did a two-week volunteer placement with a French organization, and we were essentially helped to rebuild a medieval structure in the southern part of France near Avignon. And I picked that because first I had seen it in the class that I took, and I had never been to France, so one of my goals is to always try and find someplace new to go. I don't speak the language fluently by any stretch of the imagination. I have ballet French and I have Epicurean French. Those are the two types of French that I speak. And I thought, if I can go to a country where I don't know the language and I can take on a project that I have absolutely no knowledge about, then I can do my year. So I went. I had so much fun. I can't tell you. We were there for 2 weeks in July. It was the summer. The cicadas were singing. It was Mediterranean climate. We worked for approximately 4 to 5 hours a day. We had our afternoons off, and we had fresh food cooked for us, and we were in the most charming landscape, and I thought, I can do this. So I did that little put the toe in first before I went on my full year, and I came back from France just knowing I was going to be able to do my whole year.
When you mentioned that you were there, you had food cooked for you and so on and so forth, how much of this, you're there volunteering, how much of your living expenses do they pay, or do they pay any? Do you foot the bill on all of that? How does all that work as part of the package?
Volunteer travel, volunteer vacations, and volotourism all are the same word, but it can mean many different things. It can mean anything from you're going for 1 week, you're going for 4 months. It can mean where you're footing the entire bill. It can mean that some of your bill is paid. It really depends on the agency. It depends on for how long you're going to go. Basically, what I found is that if you're going for anywhere under about 6 months, you are most likely going to be footing the entire bill. Because think about it. Just like a nonprofit in the United States needs volunteers to run, so does the foreign nonprofit. So, for instance, when you are... Like, for instance, I love to volunteer at our Museum of Nature and Science. But while I'm volunteering for them, maybe only 4 hours a week, I'm housing myself, I'm feeding myself, I've got my own transportation, I'm doing all my own insurance. All of those things are hard costs that are needed whether you're working as a volunteer in the U.S. or whether you're working internationally. So that was a long answer for a short question. Basically, if it's under 6 months, you are probably going to be funding the entire thing. And that may sound a little steep, but what I found is that a two-week vacation and a two-week volunteer vacation may have the exact same amount of upfront expenses, but depending on the agency that you're volunteering for, you may be able to write off half, if not all, of your expenses if you're doing a volunteer trip.
Now, you've mentioned this a couple of times, the agency
mm-hmm.
you're volunteering for or through. Explain... What is the agency? Who is the agency?
Well, it can be two different things. If you are a do-it-yourselfer, you may know that you are going to a foreign country. Let's just pick Ghana. You're going to Africa and you're going to Ghana, and you decide, well, while I'm there, I want to volunteer. And you could do all your internet research, and you could find a school or a hospital or a library or perhaps a building project that needs some volunteers. And you could go to them directly and say, hi, I'd like to come and volunteer for you. And then they would let you know how much it was going to cost. Now, there are a lot of people that don't want to do all that internet research. They want to sort of have more of a one-stop shopping deal when they are thinking about a volunteer trip. And there are agencies, I'm going to call them volunteer sending agencies, that have a relationship with foreign nonprofits who are looking for volunteers. For instance, the one that I used out of Minnesota is called Global Volunteers. They work with nonprofits in about 25 countries, and they all work on children's health, children's education issues. And they have a relationship with the foreign nonprofit, and they say, what type of projects do you need? And they write it all down, and they find out what it's going to take to send a volunteer there, and then they advertise and say, we have these programs that you can go to. You can go to Romania and work with orphans. You can go to the Cook Islands, and you can help with education in the high school level, or you can help in some of their libraries. And you sort of pick the project that fits your budget, your interest, the country you want to go to, the time that it's going to be happening. So you can sort of find it two ways. You can find it yourself, or there are these blanket agencies, volunteer sending organizations, that have a list of projects that are looking for volunteers.
Now, the individual, such as yourself, whether you're using an agency or not, you have to take into consideration, I would imagine, as you did when you went to France on your initial trip, whether or not you can speak the language. Is there going to be a language barrier that is going to make it difficult, if not impossible, to function there? How do people overcome that if they are interested, like you were in French or in France, but have limited linguistic capabilities?
Right. What I found as I dug deeper into this industry is that it's been going on for a lot longer than most of us suspect. It sort of had a resurgence of interest, for instance, after the tsunami in Thailand, or after 9/11, or after any of the major earthquakes or the floods or the typhoons that happen. But it's been going on for a long time. And the countries that tend to be doing it are Britain, Ireland, Canada, the U.S., Australia, New Zealand, a lot of them, a lot of European nations, and yet all of them tended to be very fluent in English. So what I found is almost 100% across the board, the agency that is going to be the receiving agency in the foreign country knows that the vast majority of the people are going to be English speaking. And so English is spoken on the work site, whether it's a U.S. staff person that goes over and helps, or if there is a in-country coordinator who speaks English fluently. English is normally spoken on the worksite. And obviously, if you have any foreign language, or if you have an interest, any attempt you make to speak the foreign language is always appreciated. Some of the agencies believe it is so important that as a Westerner, when we travel into a foreign country, that we make a real effort. Sometimes they will incorporate remedial local language lessons in the time that you are doing your volunteer work, because part of it is to expand your cultural awareness, and also being a good global citizen is to be able to really interact with the local people, because that's why most people are really interested in doing a volunteer trip. It's a volunteer trip compared to a normal trip is one where you're probably going to be staying in one place. You're going to be interacting on a daily basis with a lot of local people, and they want you to build the relationship, to build the friendship, to get a feel for what it's like to live in that country, what it's like to be in that society, what are the issues that are important and are of a daily interest to them, and how does that compare and contrast to what our daily issues are. So language is normally not a big sticking point. There are very few that will be very specific in that they do require fluency in a foreign language, whether it be French or Mandarin or Spanish or Arabic. Those are few and far between. And when you find those, it's going to be pretty clear. Must be at least advanced beginning, or must be fluent in this language.
What about lodging? I mean, if you're going to be doing this through an agency, I'm assuming they're going to set up the lodging for you as well. Is that correct?
Exactly. Let me just go over basically what is covered when you pay and you go through an agency. And like I said, the prices can range tremendously, and a lot of it depends on the length of time you're going to be there, but also what type of work you're doing. For instance, when you pay a fee to Global Volunteers, and you are going to Romania to work in the with the orphans, what your fee pays for is you get pre-trip literature. They send you a complete idea of what you'll be doing. They will arrange for all of your housing and your food, your local transportation, and there's also insurance that covers you while you're there. What you will have to cover is your airfare, any shots or visas, and any vacation-type things that you might be doing while you're there, or any extra special treats like alcohol, things like that. But basically, once you are in that program and you arrive at the destination, someone meets you at the airport, you are transported to your hotel, then you are transported out to the work site on a daily basis. You are probably housed with a roommate, a same-sex roommate, or couples. There are certain places, pardon me, I have a frog in my throat, certain places where if couples are going together, there are accommodations for a couple. And then there's insurance. And also a portion of what you're paying through Global Volunteers is also funding, helping to fund the program, whether it's paying the salary of the local coordinator or it's helping to fund the nonprofit, whether it's the orphanage or a school. So because a portion of what you are doing is volunteering, and a portion of what you've paid is also an out-and-out donation, the IRS sees that as volunteer work or philanthropy, and therefore the agency will send you a letter at the end of the year highlighting how much you paid, and then you can take that letter to your tax accountant, and you should be able to, depending on what your tax profile looks like, should be able to write off almost everything that had to do with that trip.
Wow. So you're basically traveling in some respect free because the fact that it is volunteerism.
Exactly. Now, obviously, if you're going to Europe for 4 months and you're only volunteering for 2 weeks, the expense of 4 months of living in Europe will not be tax deductible. Only the portion of the amount of time that you are doing your volunteer work would be proportional. But, for instance, for someone who is a boomer who is still working and maybe trying to fit a volunteer 2-week trip into maybe a 3-week or a 2.5-week vacation slot, if the majority of the time that you are on your trip is going to be for the volunteer work, then obviously the visa, any luggage fees, any parking expenses, any additional expenses that can be attributed to the volunteer work may also be tax deductible.
Now, you said that you pay your fee and it takes care of your lodging is set for you by the agency. Your meals
Yep.
are set. Now, are these your normal run-of-the-mill breakfast, lunch, dinner? How does that work as far as your – and then your lodging, it's only at that one hotel where they have their contract with to put these volunteers. Is that correct?
Right. Normally, what the agency, I'll go back to Global Volunteers, they will work with a local, an in-country coordinator who will know where the work site is and will know where the local accommodations are, and they will arrange for one that is appropriate. Normally, the group, the volunteers, have breakfast as a group. Then you load in your transport and you go to your work. Sometimes you may go to a restaurant for lunch. Sometimes you may be carrying your lunch with you. It really depends on the location. For instance, I was with Global Volunteers working with orphans in Peru. We were in a small family-run hotel that had a restaurant, and we would have breakfast, and it had, you know, they had cornflakes for us, or you could have Peruvian breakfast. We'd go in the bus, and then because the hotel didn't have that big of a catering kitchen, we would go to a different restaurant every lunchtime. And then also in the evening, we would have some of our meals in the hotel in Peru. And other times, we would go to different restaurants every night. Now, in Romania, it was very similar. We were in a very small, family-run hotel, and the orphanage was about a 25-minute trip away, but believe me, we were in the closest hotel to the orphanage. So we would have breakfast again, Western style breakfast available, and then we would take in coolers and hampers. We would take our lunch with us; they would be warmed up at the orphanage, and then we would come back in the evening, And most of the time we would eat in the hotel, but sometimes we would go into the closest little town, which was about 15 minutes away, and sort of do a little shopping or go out to a restaurant. So it really depends on the type of project you pick.
When you did your trip.
When I did my trip, my passion is animals. So of the 12 that I did, 7 were with wildlife. And I was working either on a scientific project where we were monitoring or studying wildlife in the wild, or it was a rehabilitation center where injured or orphaned wildlife was brought in and raised and hopefully then re-released back into the wild. Those don't tend to be in the middle of cities or in the suburbs. So we were farther out. So in those instances, I was not in hotels. I was normally living on a rehabilitation center or on a farm where the animals had been collected. So though, you know, that was more communal cooking. We were considerably smaller groups normally, so we were cooking for each other. Because we were remote, getting in and out of town was a little bit farther away. So we might get into town once a week for interneting and picking up supplies. So it was a very different experience. So it just really depends on the project that someone is passionate about and wants to go do.
You mentioned smaller group. How large or small typically are these groups that you're staying in a hotel, there's a group of you there, you're being bused to the site, wherever it is, or whatever you're doing for work, and then back again in the afternoon or evening. How many people does that entail? How many people are moving around like this together?
It really depends. It depends on the time of the year. It depends on what an agency needs for volunteers. For instance, when I was in, I'll go over the three that I was with, Global Volunteers. When I was in Peru, we were a team of 11. And then after the first week, we went down to a team of 8. When I was in the Cook Islands, again, I was working in schools there. We were a very small team. We were only a team of 7. And then in Romania, that was my very last one of the year. I was there the month of December. And that started out as a week of a team of 5. Then we went to a team of 3. And the last week, it was just me and the other coordinator. So it was a team of 2. So it just depends. It really depends. Now, the wildlife ones, those were even smaller teams. There were times I went as an independent and I was joined by another volunteer. There were times I was within a group of 20 people. So it really depends.
This whole thing is just fascinating to me to listen to you tell these stories and how the logistics of it works. It's just amazing to me. And I'm also amazed, frankly, and I don't know why, I probably shouldn't be, but I am, that the nonprofits in this country also accept people from outside of this country to come in and volunteer. That amazes me.
Yes. It's funny, there is one volunteer sending organization based in New Zealand, and they have placements in South Dakota.
It seems to me that there just aren't a sufficient number of volunteers, period, for these various organizations.
I know sometimes people ask me, and they say, well, why didn't you just stay home and volunteer? And I said, you know, I did. I do. And I will continue to do. I'm still a very active volunteer. But at times, what you're drawn to takes you farther afield.
Sure,
so
sure.
So that's what, when I teach, and I have to admit, since I've been teaching since I got back in January of 2007, and what I'm finding is the vast majority of my clients and my students are baby boomer women who are either experiencing an empty nest for the first time or are somewhere, you know, retirement is on the horizon. They see it coming. Maybe it's in 5 or 7 years. And they're starting to look around. They're trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do? What can I do now? What can I start getting involved with now that I'm going to want to do when I'm in retirement? And what I keep stressing to people when I talk and or I speak is that please be passionate about the program. When I wrote my book, it ended up being a step-by-step sequence of questions to ask yourself to first narrow down the myriad of different options out there to a manageable few. Because when you go on Google and you look for volunteer vacations, there's over 500,000 links. And people will go blind and become paralyzed just trying to weed through that. So I break it down into, why are you volunteering? And what I mean by that is, do you want to do something you already do, or do you want to try something totally different? Because that's a big question that can quickly have the number of opportunities. Then the next one is, what do you want to do? What have you always wanted to experience? What is so beguiling you can't wait to go try that? And then find out, where is that happening? When is it available? Who else do you want to be with you? And then how much is it going to cost? And after they've answered those six questions, and that can take some time, that can take some due diligence, that can take some soul searching to really be straight with yourself to figure out, what is it I would love to go try? Because only after you know that, then can you find the project, and then do you plan the trip.
How often does it happen, or does it happen at all, that somebody will say, I really want to go here, they've answered the questions that you just posed, and the answers were all what are the appropriate answers to get them to go there, and then they get there and they go, oh my gosh, this is not what I had hoped it would be. It's just not a fit. What happens if that were to be the case?
Right. If it is an absolute not going to fit at all, most agencies will give you an out. However, there have been hard expenses to get you there, et cetera, and so some of those may not be tax deductible. But what I encourage people to do is, if you haven't already started volunteering, you know, first of all, some people don't understand what it is to truly volunteer. And it's hard, especially for someone who is working hard, working 40 hours a week, and now they're going to go on vacation. And sometimes it's hard to leave your business brain behind you, because you know how it can be done and you can see how it's going to be done. But why you're volunteering is that the agency needs some help. It needs your hands. It needs your enthusiasm. But it doesn't necessarily need you to impose what you think would be a good idea on this project. That's why the most rich experiences happen when the projects are led by a local person, because they know what is needed locally and they know what the community really needs. And so you have to be basically a servant learner. A lot of people volunteer thinking, you know, well, I know all this and I can help, and that's great. But what the nonprofit really needs is someone who's going to show up like a sponge and sit there and go, yes, I know about taking care of animals. I've taken care of animals, but I don't know how to take care of your animals. So you teach me how you do it, and let me help you. What I found is the most precious thing you can say to the country coordinator every morning is, what can I do today that will help you the most? That's the type of willingness and openness that is going to expand your experience and also make you a very, very valuable volunteer. And you'll learn so much just by watching how other cultures do things, sometimes with a lot less resources than we do, but they still get the work done.
What is interesting when we're talking about volunteerism and just the subject of volunteerism, as I see volunteers here at this food bank location where we do our radio show every day, and I see the volunteers every day. And the key, I think, and Deborah will, if she were here, she would just trumpet this till the sun goes down, and that is that when you have volunteers, you better have something for them to do. If there's nothing worse than being a volunteer, giving of your time, and in this particular case, your money, and going someplace and not having sufficient work or sufficient work that is of even interesting, at some level interesting, to do when you're there. Is that ever the case
when somebody gets there and they go, well, this, I think that's what I was referring to when I asked that original question. How often does it happen, if at all, that a volunteer gets there and it's just, I mean, it's, they didn't say it was mucking stalls, but it's just mucking stalls.
Right. It can feel that way at times, and part of that is what, and what I emphasize to my clients is that you have to do your due diligence, and part of that is finding out exactly what the program is going to look like. I mean, is it mucking stalls? And some of that is coming in with realistic expectations as to what you truly can accomplish in 2 weeks. Sometimes, yes, indeed, you can paint the boys' dormitory bathroom in 2 weeks, but not if you have to do all the prep work. So what a lot of people have a hard time understanding is that different cultures value time differently and different cultures value community differently. If you've ever read Three Cups of Tea, you know that Greg Mortensen couldn't even think about starting to build the school for the girls until he developed a relationship with the community. And even as you sit down for the very first time to have a meeting, no business is discussed until you've had three cups of tea. Because the first cup you're a stranger, the second cup you're a friend, and the third cup you're finally family. And only when you're family will we talk to you. So it can appear at times that there isn't a lot to do. But when you can look at it through what is valuable to this community, when they realize that, yes, me having the conversation with the grandmother while we're waiting for someone to find the key to unlock the storeroom where the paints and brushes are held, that is a value, too. And so at times, if you are a type of, if you have the energy and the interest in being really productive and really moving forward on things, then those are the type projects you've really got to focus on.
Well, so it really is a case then, even there, that it's different different strokes for different folks. If you're not going to be able to sit there while that key is being found and be in some way productive or at least communicative with people, you're going to be miserable, I would imagine. I mean, there's just going to be things that you're going to find so out of the ordinary from what you're used to. It goes back to where you started this conversation. It says you've got to be able to maybe leave your work mode behind and shift into a completely different frame of mind.
Exactly.
And how tough is that? I mean, you're an experienced traveler and you're experienced at this now. How tough was it for you, as an example, to make that kind of a transition?
Well, I had my breakthrough moment 4 days in when I was in Peru, and I was locking horns with a 4-year-old orphan.
Oh my!
And I don't have children, so working with children was going to be quite an experience for me. And I so wanted to help. I just, you know, my heart was bursting. I just want, you know, let me help, let me help, let me help. And this 4-year-old had me round her finger faster than anything. And I was beginning to doubt myself, and I was beginning to come upset. And I thought, oh, my God, I have to go home. I haven't even been here a week, and I have to go home. And I finally, you know, and other people were sort of coaching me and saying, just let it go. Let it go. And what I realized is I was bringing my agenda with me. This is how play looks. This is how behavior is. This is what it will look like for me to be successful. And I was making it all about me. And, you know, there is no I in volunteer. You know, volunteering, it's all about giving and offering. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to get back an equal amount, but it may not be exactly what you expect to get back, but believe me, you're going to get a lot back. So part of it was having the ability to look at a situation where a disconnect is happening. There's not communication happening, or I'm not feeling valuable, and to stand there and go, I am in Peru. How many people would give their eye teeth to be in Peru right now? Why am I beating myself up about this? Why am I allowing myself to have a negative moment here? When if I can just release and let go, it will change. And so another thing I found is that the volunteers that seem to be the happiest are the ones who are sitting there while they're waiting for the key to arrive, to unlock the tool shed, to get to the brushes, is to ask around, what else do you need done? You know, I have my computer with me, and I saw that you have a newsletter. You know, do you need help with your newsletter? Or, you know, or you see the women, you know, washing the dishes. You know, can I help over there? So if you go in, they're going to give you a rough outline of what you can expect on a daily basis. And yet it all is pretty much dependent on weather and timing. For instance, even if you are there at a school and you've been told you are going to be coaching second grade reading tomorrow, here's your classroom, here's your teacher that you'll be assisting, here are the kids, aren't they cute, and tomorrow you're going to come back. If it rains overnight and the electricity is cut to the school and the basement floods in the school, you're not coaching reading tomorrow. You're helping to mop out the basement. And so when I look at volunteers, what I really recommend is begin volunteering at home to get a feel for what it's like to be a volunteer. Because even if you are highly educated and very skilled, you don't know how that work happens in this location. And so you have to be a little flexible and a little malleable. Sure, you can offer suggestions, but if they're not taken, then keep going. You know, they are doing it for a specific reason that way. And if that doesn't work for you, then maybe look for a different volunteer thing.
That is absolutely so very, very wise and so true. And I can relate to that right here at the food bank. The food bank gets in all kinds of canned goods and produce, and I mean just anything you can imagine. And we're coming into the holiday season now, so what the plans that are being made here now are, how are they going to prepare and how are they going to put together these holiday food boxes. And we were involved in that last year, and it is a simple thing like a human assembly line. The box slides down, you put two cans of corn, two cans of peas, the box moves on. Somebody else puts in some stuffing mix for the turkey, the box moves on, so on. It goes down the line like that. And you sit there for an hour or two and just shuffling boxes. The last guy takes it, labels it, packs it up, and puts it in a stack. And then somebody else from the agency comes and takes them away. Where they go, I don't know. But the fact is, that's what we're doing. It's pretty mundane, and if they've been doing it for years, who am I to say, no, the line has to go the other direction? It just doesn't make sense. And you've got to be able to go with that flow. And,
Go ahead.
No, I was done.
Part of it, what I was going to say is that at times, as you know, nonprofits in all around the world, and in the U.S. as well, they're having to make do with a lot less staff. And so how I look at it for myself is, I am a great envelope stuffer. I am a great sweeper of the floor. I can do whatever you want me to do. I have many skills, and if you want those, I am happy to share them. But if you need me to sweep the floor or to organize the sugar packets, then that's what I'll do. Because that frees up a more knowledgeable staff person or local person to do the work that they really need to do to move the nonprofit forward. It's like, I couldn't teach the orphans in Peru mathematics in Spanish, but if I can help do the laundry or mow the lawn or whatever else needs to do, then the teacher doesn't have to do the mundane work. They can do the work that they can do.
Exactly. Anytime you're traveling, whether it be for volunteering or just having a trip, especially if you're going abroad, anywhere really, I mean for any kind of extended length of time, there are certain things that you have to consider. One of the, is it safe? Is the travel safe? Is the travel safe specifically if you go alone? So what are your considerations there, and how are your concerns alleviated?
Part of that, especially if you're doing a solo trip as a woman or as a man, and it's your first time going internationally, I highly recommend using an agency, because they everything is pre-planned as much as it can be. They know what hotel, they know how to pick you up, they know that the list of people are coming and your name is on it. They know to expect you. what I found is when I was doing my year, because I was a single woman traveling alone, and I had coordinated my trip through multiple different agencies, but there wasn't one big overall umbrella agency that was looking out for me. Each individual agency sort of took an interest in me as I was coming closer to their project. And there were places I went that, you know, if you read the guidebooks, it sounds pretty scary. So I read up on all of those, and how I made it safe for myself is I, especially if I was going from one continent, like, for instance, when I was flying to Hong Kong to South Africa, that's a 9-hour flight. And I knew I would be arriving, you know, at early in the morning, and then I had to catch a flight later in the day. So what I did is that I would tend to fly into a new location and immediately go into my volunteer work, because someone would meet me at the airport, they would take me to the hotel, and I could get over my jet lag in a community of people where there were parameters already built in. And then as I was getting over my jet lag and getting into my volunteer work and working my 2 or my 3 weeks in the volunteer project, then as I got my feet wet, then I could start asking around and say, okay, now when I'm done with the volunteering, I'm going to stay in the country, and I want to go do a couple of these tourist-type things. What can you recommend? And I could start asking around. And that way I wasn't all by myself in a foreign culture without great comfort with the language. And I could get over that in a community. And then as I got my feet wet, then I could be braver. And I had a better feel for what it was like to be in this country.
What happens if somebody takes ill while they're performing their volunteer activities? What happens if you get sick? You get the revenge or something, whatever, you know, like you do in Mexico or whatever. How does that?
Well, what I tell people is, do not be shy. Go immediately to the local coordinator and say, I am not well, and they describe what the situation is. Because believe me, if it's upset stomach, they're going to know what it is. You know, they know what the local bug is, and the local coordinator will know where the local clinic is, where the local pharmacy is, or who the local doctor is to get you what you need. That being said, when you're working through an agency, they are going to know the most common things that can happen, and they work to educate you against it. For instance, when I was in Thailand, it is never, ever appropriate to drink the tap water in Thailand. It is not processed to be compatible with a Western stomach. So you always, always, always drink, brush your teeth with bottled water. And it's in every bathroom. And you don't ever drink the ice there, because the ice may not have been purified before it was turned into ice. So yes, your Coke is fine, but the ice that you put into the Coke may cause you problems. So I always encourage people, you know, be sensible. If they say don't eat off the street carts, don't eat off the street carts. If they say brush your teeth every time with bottled water, every time use bottled water.
Don't deviate from whatever they say to do, particularly as it involves food and things that go into your mouth.
Exactly. And I mean, even to the point where when you're showering in some of those countries, you keep your mouth shut.
Really?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, but you don't think of it. You just don't think of it.
And part of it, like you brought up before, is like, you know, what if this is not a good match and you're really unhappy and you've spent a lot of time and money? That's my whole point when I approach any time I would travel, is like, I've spent good money to get here, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to enjoy my trip. And that means being conscious and aware of health concerns and safety issues. For instance, as you know, a lot of the world drives on a different side of the street than we do. And so I would spend an inordinate amount of time on any street corner looking right and left and right and left and right and left just to remind myself, now, where is the traffic coming from?
Yeah, do I turn right to right, left to left? What do I
exactly.
do
Exactly. Well, and for instance, in Australia, you may have heard when they hosted the Olympics, there were so many people who were stepping out into oncoming traffic because they were not looking in the correct direction, that when I was in Sydney, at every intersection, there would be painted on the ground, on the pavement in front of me, a sign saying traffic comes from here to remind me, don't look to the right because you're going to get hit by the car coming up on your left because they're driving on the different side of the road.
Well, that was awfully nice of them to paint that on the sidewalk for you.
Yes.
That's a very considerate country.
Those Australians, they're just so friendly.
There you go. What happens if you've got a family and you're trying to travel with your family? First of all, can you travel with your family? And can you be doing your volunteerism while your family is off doing something else?
Again, it's going to depend on the agency. If the family wants to volunteer together, and there are agencies that have even kids as young as six can go, providing they're there with a parent, then sometimes it's more economical because you can say, look, I have a family of four coming, and I know it's supposed to be this much, but will you give us a discount? And a lot of times they will. Or if you get a big extended family, like let's say you have, you know, mom, dad, two kids, grandparents, and Aunt Louise wants to come. If you can say, I'm bringing seven people, all of a sudden the price is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you want to volunteer in an urban setting or a suburban setting where there are all different types of entertainments, then it might be possible for a family to have a couple people who want to do the volunteer work and a couple people who don't. But the whole point when you're volunteering is to bond with the other volunteers. So it might be a bit of a wrench as you keep trying to go in and out of your family life and your volunteer mode. One thing I wanted to stress is that for the IRS to allow for a tax deduction, you have to work 40 hours a week, basically 5/8. And Earthwatch and Global Volunteers, which are American nonprofits, they know that, and they schedule your time. Believe me, when you go through some of those agencies, you will not be able to say they're not using my time correctly because they will use you. Now, some of the more foreign-based projects, they have a different take on that. You may only work 4 hours a day. You may only work 6 hours a day. You may only work 3 days a week. So it really can change. But the one caveat I want to be very strong on is that the foreign-based agencies, which, again, you may still have to pay to go volunteer at, because it's not an American nonprofit, you can't write off those expenses. But they tend to be less expensive. And you still have a really fascinating, interesting experience. And what I found with a foreign-based nonprofit who is using volunteers, it tends to be a very international mix of volunteers. So it's not just all Americans or Canadians with you. It's people from all different countries. So it really depends on what are you interested in. Are you really looking for it to be very economical? Then you can start looking in that way. Or are you looking for it to be a very interesting, rich, very multicultural experience? Then maybe the foreign nonprofit is the one to look at for you.
Is it ever the case that when you're traveling, you're doing your volunteer work, that you actually stay with some of the locals, that you don't stay in a hotel?
There are some that are, those are called homestays, or you might be in a community center where you might be sort of sleeping on cots in a community center. Yes, and those again, are very rich. You are living with a family. What you are paying to the agency or paying directly to the family is to house and keep you. You might take some meals with them. They might even encourage you to help teach them English as they help teach you their local language. So those can be very, very rich.
That sounds really like an interesting stay all the way around. Not only are you working with the nonprofit, but also you're sharing and learning with a family that's there as well. I mean, that could be a, like you say, very, very rich experience that I don't know how else you could get that experience unless you had that kind of an arrangement.
Yeah, it's hard because there's some communities where it's hard to sort of break in. I mean, they're polite to you and all, but to really get a feel for what it's like to live with them or to have them to really accept you as part of the community, you know, it can take an either a long time. And believe me, if you are in a homestay type situation, you know, as the relationship builds, you hardly need to worry about your safety because, believe me, they are taking care of your safety, you know. And
right.
Because they are in the community, they know that, well, you know, this foreigner belongs to the Smiths that live two doors down, and the sort of the whole little community, you know, sort of, you know, adopts you and sort of takes you around.
It takes a village, as they as they say.
But exactly, and you know, we don't. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
Sometimes we feel very uncomfortable with that, and yet that is what a lot of the world, you know, depends on. They are out. They are, you know, they're very much, you know, every mother is looking out for every kid, and they know every kid's cry, and they know who's really in danger, who's just putting it on. And it can feel overwhelming if you are not in a close-knit family with a lot of community around you. So just know it's something that's very natural for them. They're interested. Sometimes they can ask the most amusingly personal questions, and they're doing it in total innocence. And yet, you know, they are in their questions, they are helping you understand what's important to them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean you're not married? What do you mean you don't have kids? How old are you? Where's your husband? You know, it can feel a little overwhelming, and yet just realize that in their culture, that's expected.
That's expected by a certain time in your life also.
Yeah. Right.
A couple last things. We're getting down to the short rows here. A couple of things that I see on this list of topics that you and I have passed back and forth. First of all, what happens if you're not in great physical shape, and are there any age limits and requirements to do the volunteer? I know you mentioned something about as young as 6, I think you mentioned just a minute or two ago, but I kind of put those all in one. So let's talk about physical requirements and any other kind of limitations that there might be as far as being a volunteer.
Generally, when you go through an agency, they're going to send you a list of questions, just some health questions, and they're going to say, you know, in this experience, you may have to walk 3 miles, you may have to carry some stuff, and they want to be upfront with, you know, what physically you're going to be expected to do. And if they see anything in your application that it rings a bell for them, they may call you and say, you know, I see you've had a recent back surgery, and you need to be carrying a little bit of equipment. That may not be the best match for you. Have you considered maybe looking at this project instead? So they'll try and work with you. That being said, the oldest gentleman that I was aware of on the archaeological dig I did with Earthwatch in Thailand was 80. And he was not down in the pit excavating pots out of the ground, but he was up on the ground level under a tarp, under a fan with a hat on, and he was gently washing broken bits of pottery and then letting them dry in the sun and then gluing the pots back together. So there are ways that if you aren't, you know, physically robust and, you know, able to leap tall buildings with only one bound, there are still things you can do. And some of that depends on the project you pick. There are some that are in the suburbs or are more urban. There are some that are office-based. There are others that are more data-based. If you are excellent with your computer, or you're a great writer, or you're good with organizing things, or maybe you're interested in art restoration. I mean, there's so many different things that you can look into that don't require you to be standing in the sun, in the hot, wielding a hammer for 6 to 8 hours a day.
Well, as we're wrapping it up, Jane, tell us a little bit about your Where Is She Heading LLC. What does that do? Tell mm-hmm. us also about some of your consulting and your speaking and so on, and how can people get hold of you? Kind of wrap us up with that as
we
end.
Where Is She Heading, if you take the first letter of each word, forms the word wish. And that was what my trip was. It was a wish come true. And so in Where Is She Heading, I speak and I teach and I write about volunteer travel, but I also do presentations, keynotes, and workshops on steps you can use to find what really is of interest to you. So if you hear me talking about being chewed on by baboons or digging up bones in Thailand, and that just doesn't hit a bell for you, don't listen to what I've said, but listen to the enthusiasm and figure out what that enthusiasm is for you. In my teaching, I use my book, Mapping Your Volunteer Vacation, which I said is a sequential. It's a workbook. It's $20. It's a sequential set of steps where you can answer those questions for yourself and keep notes and go back and forth and then plan your trip. It is available on my website. It is available at bookstores. If your bookstore is out of it, they should be able to order it, Mapping Your Volunteer Vacation. And as I consult, what I recommend people to do is, you know, take some time to find out what your passion is. And when you're thinking about your passion and you're excited about your passion, find the people that are the most supportive around you and talk to them. It may not be your family. It may not be your boss. It may not be your spouse. But find that cheerleader who, when you say, I'm going to go do this, and they go, yes, I see you doing that. Yes, I can't wait for you to go do it and then come back and tell me about it. Those are the people that you share your passion with, and brainstorm with them. And then as you build it and build it and build it, when it becomes very strong within your own heart, then you can start sharing it, if you feel a need to, with other people around you. But don't deny yourself your passion, because it's very unique and very special. And there's no one dream, wish, trip, volunteer project, or whatever that's going to fit everybody. So you find the people that it fits, and those are the people you talk to about it. And that's what I coach my clients on.
And if people want to get some of your coaching, be the recipient of your knowledge and information, how can they get hold of you?
Through www.jane, J-A-N-E, Stanfield, S-T-A-N-F-I-E-L-D, wish, W-I-S-H.com, or my phone number, 303-988-1356, or my email, WILADYJANES@gmail. And what my email is whereisladyjanes@gmail.com.
What's your next trip? Tell us where you're going next.
Actually, I am have applied for and will apply next year as well to work on Antarctica to support the scientists who are down there doing research.
My gosh. That sounds pretty far out there, not only in distance, but in as far as a region.
Yes. It's very far. You're right. It's very, very far. But it's also been a burning wish for me ever since I saw my first penguin in the wild. I saw my first penguin in the wild in New Zealand, and I thought, oh, there's only 17 of these. I need to see them all where they live. And there's two that only live on Antarctica.
Wow.
So I thought, okay.
I mean, is that for an extended length of time, an extended stay?
It's not volunteer work. It would be paid work because you are down there. It's under the National Science Foundation charter. And normally, most people go down during the summer season, which is October through end of February, when it's light and when the planes can land. However, there are some people that will stay over the entire year. I'm not interested in staying the entire year. I want to go for the summer. And my real goal is to go next summer. So next October, my goal is to be on Antarctica working.
Go to Antarctica when it's hot down there.
Yeah, you still have to wear your polar red suit, but at least your face can get sunburned.
There you go. Well, Jane, this has been a phenomenally exciting and interesting hour spending a time with you. I'm glad you came online with us and told us about your exploits and your adventures. I hope people take a look at this as a possible way of vacationing and helping out everybody around the world as far as if you're interested in volunteering. So I can't thank you enough for being a guest on the show today. And I guess it's for your next trip, it's safe travels and bon voyage, huh?
Most definitely. Pete, thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure. And just want to pass on one more little word of advice.
Sure.
A well-selected trip is as addicting as a potato chip, and you deserve it. So don't let anyone say no.
there's a disc jockey here that I like to listen to in the morning. He says, if you don't deserve it, who does?
Exactly.
So,
and my parting shot would be, and if not now, when?
There you go. Excellent. All good words of advice. Thank you very much, Jane Stanfield. We really appreciate you taking the time for us.
Thank you, Pete. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You do the same. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio, and we hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Jane Stanfield, one of the more enlightening conversations we've had lately. We've had a lot of good ones, but this is pretty something out of the ordinary for us because we haven't had this type of a guest on that has this kind of knowledge and information on a worldwide basis for some time, and it's really nice to know that there are people out there doing things around the globe that are really benefiting other people and helping this country get a better name, I guess, is a good way to look at it as well. We bring you good conversations every day, and we'll have more good conversation again tomorrow on our Exploring Faith show. Until then, we want to remind everybody that the Boomer and the Babe does more than just this radio show. We also do ebooks, mini books. We do some consulting for small business, and we also do promotional products. So we do a lot of things as far as a multimedia, multifaceted marketing agency or company. Remember to join us again tomorrow at 10 o'clock for Exploring Faith with Father John Mayer from the Episcopal Church from here in Peoria, Arizona, and the special guest that he'll bring along. We'll find out who that guest is tomorrow. And be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, and enjoy your day, everybody, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. To the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.